Hello again, it's Duncan here with some of the stuff we've been up to on the City Talk Breakfast Show that you can hear weekday mornings between 6 and 10 on City Talk 105.9. We call it the Dunkcast or the Dunkcast, depending on which point in the United Kingdom you're downloading this particular bit of audio in. So some of the stuff we've been up to, well, I can tell you during the week it was the 15th anniversary of the National Lottery. I spoke to a lady by the name of Dot Renshaw, who has this great job of working with the winners who have won stacks of cash as part of the lottery. And it's not as simple as you might think. Hear my conversation with Dot a little bit later on. I also spoke to Nick Seaton from the Campaign for Real Education. He had a bee in his bonnet during the week, as did I, about a new module in GCSE English talking about text speak. That's right, we want to teach our children how to use words properly and grammar and spelling, yet now they can get 10% of their marks in the GCSE English language exam by proving they understand how text speak works. You know, when people use letters and numbers combined to try and create a word on the mobile phone when they text people, you couldn't make it up. Well, sadly, it's not made up. It's true. Nick and I talked about it at length. You'll also hear some of your reaction regarding the Marks and Spencer's advert. You know, the Christmas advert that's doing the rounds at the moment. Loads of famous people on there. Jennifer Saunders, Stephen Fry, Joanna Lumley, and the actor who plays DCI Gene Hunt. You know him from Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes. He makes a tongue-in-cheek remark about some woman dancing in lingerie. Oh, but for some people it's not tongue-in-cheek. There have been complaints to the Advertising Standards Authority about his remarks being sexist. Good God. Sexism in an M&S Christmas TV commercial. It's true. Anyway, I asked you whether or not you thought the alleged offensive remarks were sexist in any way, shape or form, and had a great reaction. Hear more about that a little bit later on. Thalidomide victim Gary Skinner joined me in the studio during the week as he almost gets closure on his campaign to get proper compensation for victims of thalidomide. Gary Skinner and I having a chinwag, you can hear that a little bit later on. Also in Liverpool during the week, there was an event called Tweet Up North at the BT Convention Centre. I spoke to the organiser. If you're a fan of Twitter, you're going to love that. And of course, we end the Dunkcast or the Dunkcast with another Dunkin's Donut. It wouldn't be the Dunkcast or the Dunkcast without a Dunkin's Donut. And you can hear me talking all about a load of researchers who believe that using a Wii Fit, you know, the thing you plug into your TV, is just as good as jogging around your local park. Ridiculous, isn't it? So enjoy the stuff. And as ever, if you want to drop me an email, I love getting your emails. My email address is Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N, Duncan at citytalk.fm.
The best of Barks. City Talk 105.9.
It is City Talk Breakfast. This is Duncan Barks. Thank you for tuning in this morning. It is the 15th anniversary of the National Lottery. And when this information came my way, I was trying to work out the best way of maybe, well, acknowledging such an anniversary. And we could find some winners in the northwest of England, or indeed North Wales, and have a bit of a chinwag with them on the radio. But instead, I came across a lady by the name of Dot Renshaw, and she joins me on the line. Morning, Dot.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you. Thank you for your time. And I guess I should say happy 15th anniversary for the National Lottery.
I know. It seems incredible. It's 15 years since we had the first draw.
Now, what I wanted to do is get you on the show this morning because your role is fascinating, but I don't know your official title because you're the lady who kind of works with the winners once they've got their lucky numbers and a big stack of cash. So I'm guessing you're what, part financial advisor and part counsellor?
Well, actually, the title's consultant advisor, and I deal with more with the emotional side of things, and also the sort of more practical side of things with winners. We're there from the very start when they first find out they win, right through for as long as they want us, really. But in addition to that, we do actually provide them with professionals who provide legal and financial advice to the major winners as well.
It's one heck of a role. How did you actually get this job or take the position on in the first place?
Well, I started with the with Camelot when they first won the first license to run the National Lottery.
Yeah.
And I've been dealing with winners ever since. And it's just a fantastic thing to do, really. I mean, people check their tickets. They don't believe that they've won, so they recheck them. They get family members and friends to check them, and then they contact Camelot. And once we've sort of taken some details from them over the telephone, that's when my role kicks in, and I contact them and arrange to go meet them and arrange for them to actually have the money.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? Because I'm guessing a lot of people think that you know, you win on the lottery, get a massive stack of wonga, and you're made for life. But I should imagine that it must be the beginning of what's literally an emotional roller coaster once you realise that your life has well and truly changed.
Yes, it is. Because, I mean, obviously, I think most of us would say that we dream of getting some money, and if you play the lottery, you want to win the jackpot. But when you talk about it with friends and you say, if I won the national lottery, this is what I would do with the money, of course, you've no idea how much you've actually got in the pot. So when you win and you find out that you've won £5 million, £6 million, or like our recent winners in the Northwest, yeah. they won a share of the EuroMillions jackpot at £45 million, then you've got something to work with and you understand what you can actually do with it. And it can be quite daunting initially until you actually get used to it.
What kind of experiences do these people go through? Because, I mean, surely to begin with, there's this feeling of, oh my God, I can't believe it's happened to me. And you have to be very patient and explain exactly the situation they're in and the realities of what it means to them and how their life's going to change. But I'm guessing that after that, they must go through various emotions. Do they ever feel guilty?
Yes, they do, actually. And there is a variety of emotions. And the guilt is, oh, why me? What have I done to deserve this? It's incredible. You know, there must be more worthy causes than me, is where the guilt comes from. But the one thing that all winners tend to have in common is they struggle to eat and they don't sleep for the first two or three nights.
Really?
Because they just find it difficult to come to terms with. But other than that, the emotions are all different and they hit them at different stages. You know, some people just go into total shock and struggle to communicate. Others will cry. Others will laugh. I've been to a house where, a party's in full swing because they're so ecstatic about it. And then the next minute they'll be crying, even though they've been laughing and having a party. And it is this roller coaster of different things, what it means to them. And they will think about people that they may have been close to that they've lost and aren't there to share it with them. So, yeah, an emotional roller coaster is the best way to describe it.
You see, that's why I wanted to get you on the show this morning, because I think we're guilty of thinking, oh, well, all of your problems might be answered if you win the national lottery. But you can also argue that the human aspect of it is actually it creates certain other issues in your life. We talked about the guilt thing. I'm also wondering that someone who wins a significant amount of money on the lottery, they must feel quite lonely at times as well, because one presumes you become a little bit isolated from, I suppose, reality.
I think it all depends on how you are as a person. If you've got a very supportive family and a network of friends, then they will be there with you anyway throughout it. And you know, most of our winners don't move more than 20 miles away from where they live when they actually win, so that they actually stay within that network of people that they've already had.
I see.
What they do sometimes need, and this is where, you know, one of the decisions they have to make when they win is, do I want to publicise the win for everybody to see, or do I want to remain anonymous as a national lottery winner? And that's one of the things that we talk to them about. Now, if they publicise their win, then we can then introduce them to other national lottery winners and they can speak to them about their experiences, and that often helps them deal with some of the things that they might have to make decisions about.
So it's like an informal support network?
Yes. Yeah.
Fascinating. What's the best part of your job, Dot? What do you like? Well, what's the thing you like most about it?
Oh, I think it's just meeting people who are have had the good fortune to win the national lottery and hear about what a difference it's going to make to their life now. The number of people that say to me, I was just about to have the house repossessed, or I've just been made redundant, or it couldn't have come at a better time. And it's just fascinating to be with them at that point and then to see how they adjust to that win and what it does for them over the next sort of 12 months, 2 years.
And you're an employee of Camelot, so one presumes that you're not allowed to buy tickets. Have I got that right?
Anyone that works for Camelot cannot buy tickets, unfortunately.
Do you find that frustrating, or do you wait till you go overseas and take part in a lottery overseas somewhere?
I do have a little dabble when I go on holiday in Europe.
Well, listen, I found it a fascinating conversation. Thank you for your time this morning. And, here's to another 15 years of the National Lottery.
Thanks, and good luck to all your winners.
Thank you very much. That's a Dot Renshaw here on City Talk 105.9.
The best of Barks. City Talk 105.9.
It's 13 minutes past eight. Maybe you've got a child who's currently doing their GCSEs, or maybe in a few years' time will be doing their GCSEs. What would you make of a GCSE in English that contained a module regarding texting? You know, using your mobile phone, you text, you kind of text stuff in. Increasingly, and I get this on a daily basis on this radio show, I'm lucky that the majority of you lot text using the English language and proper words, not that nasty text speak where you use a combination of letters and numbers to actually mean a word, like the letter M and the number 8 to mean mate. I hate it. I hate that kind of thing. Now, when I come across this news story yesterday about a GCSE in English where students will have to answer questions about text messaging, I started thinking about this. I thought, well, maybe this is a sign of life in the 21st century. We have to accept it. You know, a lot of people text now. A lot of people use text speak as opposed to proper words. Surely we have to acknowledge that that's how life has moved on. But then also there's an argument to say it's total and utter dumbing down. Someone who I think shares that view is Nick Seaton from the Campaign for Real Education, and he joins me this morning. Morning, Nick.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for your time. I don't know where to start with this, really, Nick, because I read this story at length yesterday afternoon, and I thought, well, do you know what? Is this something to do with the fact that we have to acknowledge that children do communicate using text, or actually is it just another step closer to total and utter dumbing down?
I think it's a mixture of both, really. I mean, it's typical nonsense we've come to expect from the state education system, I'm afraid. I mean, obviously, youngsters do use texting a lot these days, and that's fine. Things do move on. There's nothing wrong with that. But youngsters learn texting from their friends. They don't need to learn it at school. And apart from the fact that, you know, when they go out into the real world, you can't really do anything unless you've got a good grasp of the English language. And that's what, there's only so much time in the school day, and that's what they should be spending the time doing, really, not learning text speak, which most of them know anyway, and better than the adults, and almost certainly better than the teachers.
You see, the ramifications for this, Nick, it seems to me, are vast, because by putting a module in a GCSE for English that contains texting, you're legitimising that use in modern day life. And any kid who gets a GCSE in English will then, one presumes, go out and get a job. Then you're going to have some poor employer having to explain to them that actually that's not how you write a certain word. There's a certain way of doing it, and you'll find the word in the dictionary. It's not a combination of letters and numbers.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, I was looking at some of the blogs about this yesterday, and an employer had blogged in and copied and pasted a job application he'd had in text speak, and I mean, it was absolute nonsense. And you know, it's obvious that a youngster who sends something like that in a job application isn't going to get a job or even get an interview. And you know, this is the difference. The point, I think, that a lot of these youngsters, because they don't learn that there's a difference between text speak and proper English, you might say, or standard English, they don't know the difference, and they use text speak all the time, and it's ridiculous. I mean, in lots of ways, it's disadvantaging them, which is the last thing schools ought to be doing, or GCSE exams, for that matter.
Well, why is this happening, Nick? I mean, I read the reports, you read the reports, because you're interested in education. We have children coming out of school who can't read or write properly, yet we have an organisation, the Assessment Qualifications Alliance, who are now creating a module, and students will get 10% of their overall mark for the section on text messaging. Why is this happening to our education system?
Well, I think a lot of it is because a lot of these rather silly people think they've got to be trendy and keep up with the times. But to a certain extent, so they have. But they've got to use the common sense, which they seem to fail to do.
But in the long term, it's not doing our children any favours at all, is it?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's actually damaging a lot of them, and especially those who come from less privileged homes, because you know, if you come from a middle class home where everybody speaks. All the family speak decent English and everybody around you, you don't have any problems. But if you come from a bit of a tough neighbourhood and need a bit of help, you might be extremely bright, but you just do need that help. But these people also, I do think, you know, sort of having followed education for about 20 years now, I do think there are some people who literally, they're so sort of egalitarian and so on, and non-judgmental about everything. They think everything has equal value. whether it's text speak and standard English or great literature and rubbish, they think it's all exactly the same. So, you know, they should cover it all in the curriculum, which is nonsense.
Well, in the interest of fair and proper journalism, I contacted the Assessment Qualifications Alliance yesterday and asked them to provide someone to come on this radio show this morning to actually explain why they decided to do this. Typically, they say they couldn't find anyone, but I have a statement here which... to all intents and purposes, appears to be written in the English language and not in text speak. It says, our new suite of GCSE English for the first teaching from 2010 offers candidates a choice of study options. They can choose to study English GCSE or they can choose the new GCSE English language, which they study alongside English literature. GCSE English language focuses on the study of language and understanding how it works. One of the areas they can study is text messaging. Texting is clearly a prevalent form of language in the 21st century. And it is right that it is given its place alongside other forms of language. Candidates are awarded marks, 10% of the total, for being able to evaluate the linguistic features of various ways of using language, including texting. What's your reaction to that, Nick?
Exactly. I mean, these people, they can all use... decent English themselves. You're absolutely right. But, I mean, I noticed the phrase, you know, text messaging deserves its place alongside other forms of language. You know, that's the sort of egalitarian nonsense and non-judgmentalism, I think, that's causing all the problems. It's, you know, text speak is fine for youngsters and for people who use it. There's no, you know, I don't have any problem with that. But I just think, as I say, school time, it should be used usefully. Otherwise, you know, it's a waste of everybody's time and money.
All right, always good to have you on the show. Thank you for your time. That's Nick Seaton from the Campaign for Real Education giving us his take and his concerns on this new GCSE in English that will launch for 2010. I mean, they start studying shortly, and it means that there'll be a module in there on texting. See, I hate text speak. I can barely bring myself to use it. And doing this kind of radio show, well, one of the key ways for people to get in contact is via text. And I know, I encourage it. I get these texts that come in from people, you know, and they create words out of letters and numbers. I haven't got a blooming clue what they're on about half the time. In fact, if you text me using text speak, it's very simple. Your text message will not get read out on my radio show because it really is a pure form of standard slipping in this country. We shouldn't be playing to the lowest common denominator who can't be bothered to learn proper words and English. You know, we should be going, it's not good enough. You do an exam, you use words that are in the English dictionary. Not a load of words you created using numbers and letters. Mate. M. The letter. And the number 8. Or my pet hate, which is when people go LOL. Lol. What's that? Laugh out loud? Lots of love? Yeah, if you want to say something, write it using the words.
The best of Barks. City Talk 105.9.
I have got a bee in my bonnet this morning. I don't mind sharing this with you. You would have seen, I'm sure, unless you've been living under a rock for the last couple of weeks, the Marks and Spencer's advert on the telly on the run-up to Christmas, all right? It featured lots of famous people who they've all been hired to kind of like, you know, talk about buying stuff at the shop, which is all well and good. But someone has complained about the advert. Not just someone, 8 people. Not just writing letters to a newspaper. No, they've complained to the Advertising Standards Authority. Now, this is the organisation in the UK that have the power to say you can't use that advert anymore because people have complained. And we're learning this morning that the Advertising Standards Authority are investigating 8 complaints. Count them, 8 complaints about one line in the M&S advert. And it features the actor. He's a good actor. Philip Glenister, he's the one who plays Gene Hunt, you know, from Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes. He makes this remark in the advert.
Oh, come on, it's Christmas. That girl prancing around her underwear.
What?
Is that really sexist? 8 complaints have been made to the Advertising Standards Authority saying that that particular remark is sexist. I'm asking you this morning, if you're a lady and you're listening to this across Liverpool, North West England and North Wales, if you're one of my lady City Talk Breakfast listeners, I want you to tell me if that offends you in any way, shape or form. I've got a stack of texts coming in, but I'd like some more. I'm doing a straw poll this morning. I want to get a kind of take the temperature regarding this. Even though I really want a female perspective on this, if you are a bloke, what do you make of it? I mean, I'm just listening to this morning. I'm hearing this. I'm reading these reports about people complaining about this. And I'm thinking that people have taken leave of their senses.
Oh, come on, it's Christmas. That girl prancing around her underwear.
What?
Is anyone really offended by that?
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
Something that's been a burning issue this morning is his TV adverts for M&S, and you probably have seen it on the box, it's been everywhere. Now, it features the actor who plays the TV cop Gene Hunt. The actor's name is Philip Glenister. You know him from Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes. Now, the TV advert's got loads of famous people alongside him, but this is what he says.
Oh, come on, it's Christmas. That girl prancing around her underwear.
And there's a news story.
What?
The story this morning, doing the rounds, are saying that 8 people have complained to the Advertising Standards Authority, and I've been asking you to text me and tell me whether or not you find that particular piece of the advert remotely sexist in any way, shape or form. Before we get to the texts, Linda has tweeted in on the City Talk Breakfast Twitter feed to say, Duncan, it is sexist, but I do not have a problem with it. I wonder how many people complained when that advert was screened about the guy in the laundrette taking his jeans off. Do you remember that from the 80s? It was was it Nick Kamen, I think?
Levi 501s.
Producer Will is here. You've been going through the text screen. We've had so much reaction to this. What have you got?
Loads of texts here. I'll just rattle through them. M has texted in. She says, this is not sexist. He's in character, stupid people. Numpties is just the word, says Kiara. I'd give anything to be able to look like and have the figure of that girl prancing around in her underwear. No, says someone. That's to the point, I suppose. Yeah. It's Christmas. Get a life. It's not sexist in the least. It's a bit of fun, says Jan. In Bidston, this one has no name on. It says Hannah in Rock Ferry. It's not offensive in the slightest, she says. Last year's M&S advert did have her prancing around in her underwear, so that's probably why the comment was made. And it is M&S underwear. She's a gorgeous girl and a great ad for them. If only I had a body like that, I'd be doing the same as her. Well, we'll be the judge of that. Kim in Liverpool says, hang on, I think it's a bit silly. People out there can't even celebrate Christmas and they don't complain. So why are people complaining over an advert? Be happy you can celebrate Christmas instead of moaning, says Kim. Elaine says the ad is lovely. It's not sexist in the slightest. It's just bringing some light-hearted fun to Christmas, which I'm all for. Lydia says, morning, Duncan, just on my way home from the night shift. The advert doesn't offend me. I never even thought about it when I saw it. Vicky Sigmund is in Woolton. She says, the people who have complained offend me. They want to show themselves so we can have a flipping good laugh at them. I think it's funny. People need to get over themselves and get a life, says a no-name. Hi, Duncan. I think they need to grow up and get a life. It's not sexist one bit. There are some sad people. It's a pity they've got nothing else to think about, is another one. Captain Raveman says that is the only one that's kind of almost in agreement, says that part of the advert is defo sexist. It doesn't bother me particularly, but there is no question that it is sexist. And finally, my absolute favourite text, possibly of all time, is from Dave in Old Swan, who says, it offends me that she is never naked.
The best of Barks. City Talk 105.9.
Now, the government is proposing a multi-million pound settlement for the surviving victims of thalidomide in an attempt to lay to rest the long-running drug scandal. Ministers have tabled a deal which would provide each of the 460 remaining victims with an average of £18,000 a year. And the British state would also issue a public apology for its role in the tragedy. Campaigners for the victims have been negotiating with Health Minister Mike O'Brien, and they're due to meet him later on today. And there is speculation that a settlement could be announced shortly, certainly before Christmas. Someone who's been on this radio show a number of times, who is a campaigner regarding this, is Gary Skiner, and he's in the studio. Morning, Gary.
Good morning, Don.
Good to see you as ever. Where's your kind of mind in all of this? Because you and I have spoken almost on a weekly basis over the last few months, because you started a hunger strike to raise awareness about this, to get compensation for victims of thalidomide. It looks like we're nearing the end of the journey. You've been involved in this on a daily basis. Where's your kind of head in all of this at the moment?
I'm enthused by the news. Obviously, I welcome it if it's true. I don't mean to be sceptical, but I believe it when it's in the bank.
Yeah.
I think the major thing that's broke the straw that's broke the camel's back here is the involvement of a major Liverpool celebrity, which is Ricky Tomlinson.
Go on.
A la Joanna Lumley with the Gurkhas. I think that the lead up to the general election, any government wouldn't want the adverse publicity that comes with a major celebrity back in the campaign. Ricky has been absolutely fantastic, as incidentally, and I'm not blowing smoke your way, this radio station has been fantastic. The national media have not touched this, and that really, it upsets me a little bit, and it also makes me sceptical as to whether this conspiracy lies even further into the senior media in this country. You know?
All right, well, let's look at this in a little bit more detail, because certainly, you know, when you started your hunger strike as a victim, and I don't like the word victim, but it is the word that's being used of thalidomide. You know, Granada Reports covered it. We had you on this radio show.
Yeah.
There was a bit in the Sunday Times a few months ago, and that was it. There was nothing else. Why do you think that the mainstream media have not maybe given the campaign and indeed the stories of the 460 remaining victims the airtime and the newspaper space that I believe it deserves?
Because there's nearly 460 Gary Skiners out there who don't bleat about the bus. They go about their daily duties. Yeah. They go and do a job. They've never complained. All they've done is asked quite nicely, I think, for the rightful justice that they deserve. In the meantime, they've got on being lawyers, doctors, solicitors, you know, barristers, you name it. We are a very successful race to thalidomide victims, and because we give this chirpy, happy-go-lucky outlook on life, people think, well, they're sorted, there's no problem with them.
So is it fair to say you might have got the outcome that you want quicker if you'd actually played the victim card?
Yes. I literally threatened Mike O'Brien. I went into Westminster last week, 4th of November, and grabbed him by the lapels. I was having pains in my kid. I had to come off the younger side because my doctor said to me, if you don't, you're really going to do yourself some serious harm. I literally grabbed him by the lapels and said, listen, he went, hello, I'm the minister. I said, great, you're the very man I want to speak to. And he said, get your hands off me, I don't respond to threats. I said, you're going to listen to me? Because for 50 years, you and the likes of you have ignored me, and it's not going on for one day longer. And it just seems funny that Ricky coming on board, me coming the heavy, if you like, going down there and having a word. It seems like the culmination of everything has come together at the right time.
Used the term sceptical earlier in our conversation, Gary. I mean, you've been, I think it's fair to say, sceptical throughout this kind of whole process and frustrated that the government's not hearing the message. For whatever reason they are, you also made the point that you think there's a general election coming up. Do you think the government's decision to actually acknowledge your campaign and to announce a figure for compensation for the remaining victims is purely political driven to get a few more votes in?
I'm not a political animal, but I'm looking at newspapers over the last couple of days. They're making an apology over the care homes, the Afghanistan situation. The lads who should rightly be given the right stuff are all getting apologised to, and they're getting the right treatment. Now, all of a sudden, thalidomide, a 50-year-old debacle. Listen, we are the party. And let's face it, I'll wear my rosette here. I am a Labour man. I will always be a Labour man, but I have been worried about the way this lot have performed, and I do mean this lot, because to ignore people with the horrendous disabilities, I'm one of the lucky ones, Duncan, as I'm sure you're well aware. Little Kevin Dunellan in Crosby, who appeared on the programme on BBC with me, with Ricky Tomlinson. How can you not? How can you give that man anything other than financial help? The lad is stranded. He's got a 7-year-old man. It costs £70,000 to replace. People have no idea. I've actually had people say to me, Duncan, on a blog, do you want more money? Does that go with the cars that you've got?
Well, let's talk about that, Gary, because there'll be people listening to this a little bit confused about the compensation angle, because you and I have talked at length about this. Now, maybe I'm taking people listening to this morning's knowledge on the issue for granted, but you do get a certain amount of compensation at the moment, don't you? But it's not enough.
It's certainly not.
And what you've been campaigning for, along with the other campaigners, is to actually get more money. It looks like today there's another meeting of Mike O'Brien, the health minister. They reckon a settlement could be announced certainly before Christmas. The figures being quoted is that the remaining victims, yourself included, would gain an average of £18,000 a year. What would you use that money for?
Well, at the moment, everything in the garden with me is rosy. But as a lad in Scotland who just... I mean, I was grossly overweight before I started the hunger strike, right? Yeah. I've tried every diet under the sun and it hasn't worked. And the next move may be a gastric band operation. It may have to be a gastric band. Right. If that's the case, the NHS waiting list for that is 4.5 years long. I'm overweight because of a problem with thalidomide. I'm overweight because I can't go to the gym and take my own clothes off and train and get and lift weights and everything else. So I can't conduct my life the way anyone else does. So if I need a quick fix on the NHS, that money is there for me. The other thing is that although I earn a good living, my kids, I've got nothing to pass on to the kids when I go. That is going to be a nest egg for the kids. But that's only my particular case. Kevin Dinellan needs it now.
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin needs it right now. You know, I don't know what's around the corner for me, Dung. Hopefully nothing too tragic, but who knows?
All right, you got a feeling it looks like the end is in sight. We know that the Health Minister's meeting campaign is again today. There's a prediction this is all going to be signed, sealed and delivered before Christmas. What's your gut feeling on this, Gary? Is it finally going to happen? Are you going to get closure on this?
I think it's going to... I think that the publicity, if you look at it, they're into a corner now. The Times have done a fantastic piece of reporting. The Daily Mirror went with it. You've gone with it. All media sources now are reporting imminent decision. For them to come out now and say, hey, we never said anything about this, it's not down to us. Yeah. Why have they met us 4 times in the last 4 weeks? Are they stringing us along again? Can I just say, Dunk, before you actually go, can I thank every one of your listeners, people who've contacted us by email, supportive emails. I've had two that I'm disgusted at, which, as I said to you, turned around and said, you want more government handouts, you've had to go with a couple of vehicles you've got now. I'd willingly give my car keys to anybody if they could go and have a 9-inch left arm fitted, a 14-inch right, and have their independence taken away, the life that I've had to lead for 50 years. But every one of your listeners, mate, I've had so many supportive emails. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much to this station as well.
All right, well, Gary, good to have you in and get your views on the latest developments, and certainly let's hope over the next couple of weeks it is a case of all being signed, sealed and delivered. Gary, thanks for your time.
Please,
this morning.
God, happy Christmas and happy New Year to you, Dunk.
The best of Barks. City Talk 105.9.
If you're a regular listener to City Talk Breakfast, you will know that we embrace modern technology. We're on Facebook, you just search for City Talk Breakfast. We're on Twitter, you just search for City Talk Breakfast. Twitter is something a lot of people have started to use, certainly over the last couple of years. And yesterday, there was an event taking place in Liverpool at the BT Convention Centre. It was called Tweet Up North. The lady who's the marketing manager at the BT Convention Centre and the lady behind the event is Pam Carroll, and she's on the line. Morning, Pam.
Morning, Duncan.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Good. Thanks for your time this morning. I know it's early. Listen, how did it go yesterday? Because I know you're a big Twitter fan and you had this idea of putting together Tweet Up North. It happened, I think, between midday and 2 yesterday afternoon?
Yes, it was a lunchtime event, so 12:30 till 1:30.
How did it go?
Surprisingly, it went really well. I had, obviously, no preconceptions how it was going to go. I wanted this to be successful. I just didn't have any idea of, you know, were people going to like it? Were they going to enjoy it? Were they going to go away and think that we didn't really know what we were doing with Twitter and things like that? But the turnout was really good.
Why did you put the event together in the first place? What was your inspiration?
The inspiration behind it was that in London, they regularly hold tweet-ups.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the professional community down south can get together and meet each other. You know, they're talking all the time on Twitter. And we just thought, you know, it's about time something like that happens in the north. Plus, you know, we've got a lovely venue with the BT Convention Centre. We were pretty new to Twitter and we thought it would help us develop our social network and ability, basically.
You see, what I like about Twitter is so many businesses, particularly around Liverpool and the northwest, have embraced it and they use it as a way of getting their messages out there and communicating with other businesses. You use it at the BT Convention Centre. How does it work for you?
Twofold, really. Obviously, you know, the profile, building the profile, and it's not something that happens overnight. You do have to invest time into Twitter. You can't go on and market yourself blatantly in terms of discounts and all that sort of thing. You've got to be quite clever in the way you use it, or people will just turn off to it. You know, the other way it works for us is just being able to reach an audience that we wouldn't otherwise have been able to reach. Obviously, the convention centre business is international for us. We're talking to our competitors and colleagues all over the world via Twitter and can instantly update. There was an example last week, 2 members of our team won an industry award and we didn't find out till like 10 o'clock at night. So before, you know, instead of waiting for the PR machine to kick into action, we can just go on and update that instantly via Twitter. and it spreads from there. It's like a, you know, a virus, basically.
Yesterday lunchtime, Pam, I'm curious about this, because we use Twitter on City Talk Breakfast. I was tempted to come along, but I made this slightly flippant remark yesterday. I said, oh, I don't know, maybe it's going to be the kind of event full of people wearing grey anoraks. And what I meant by that, and I still stand by that comment, is that kind of sort of like a little bit kind of anoraky. I like the fact that I communicate with people, but I've never met them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And obviously there's that aspect to it. Some people will feel comfortable about that. But what I feel we need to do is, you know, Twitter is great, but there really is no substitute for meeting in the flesh. There's that aspect. And the other aspect that I wanted to do is there's people like ourselves at the convention centre. We're using Twitter, but we're no experts. But there is some people in Liverpool who have really developed and are using this technology with great effect for the business. And that was part of the reason behind it, was to bring this local Twitter audience together. Yeah. And you know, hear from some people how they're using it, how it influences and has helped to develop their business. So there wasn't many geeks there, Duncan, unfortunately.
All right, tell us who was there yesterday lunchtime then. Were you kind of like, I mean, I'm guessing, and I know from the people who follow us on Twitter, follow the City Talk Breakfast feed, that we have people from all over the place, from all walks of life. Was there kind of like a broad spectrum of people in attendance yesterday?
There was a really broad spectrum. We had, you know, lawyers, managing directors, down to, you know, office administrators. We had a lot of people who developed social networking for their company, you know, like the Liverpool Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
We had a guy called Nick Jones there, who is, that's his job basically for the Chamber of Commerce. So that was good. Our two key speakers were great. We had Alison Gow, you know, from Liverpool Daily Post and Echo.
Yeah.
And a guy called Ian Finch, who's the MD at Mando Group. Both their speeches, shall we say, were complete, you know, were quite different from each other as well. So they both gave a really different perspective of Twitter.
So is this going to be an annual event you're going to do it again? And if so, when?
The plan is, yeah, we would love to do them quarterly. We would love to host, you know, each one and develop them and do different things. You know, I learned things yesterday. What's great about Twitter is straight after the event, everybody goes away and the feedback is online.
I know, I was reading it last night and everyone who attended was raving about the event. You certainly did well yesterday.
Exactly. So you know, that's given me the impetus to say, you know, this is something we can take forward and do it again and actually speak to our attendees. You know, what do they want to do at these events? What do they want to see? And that's the beauty of Twitter, is that the actual attendees can feed in and shape the way the event goes.
All right, good to talk to you this morning. Thank you for your time. I know it's early. That's Pam Carroll, a marketing manager of the BT Convention Centre and the brains behind Tweet Up North that took place yesterday lunchtime.
The best of breakfast on City Talk 105.9.
In a world full of bungling bureaucrats, power-crazed politicians, jumped-up pen pushers and the plain old stupid, one man fights a lone battle for sanity, armed with a sword of vitriol and a shield of common sense. Duncan Barks takes on the Pillocks the only way he can, by awarding them the title of Duncan's Donut.
Now, when it comes to issues of health and exercise, I have to be very careful about what I say, because if you've ever seen a picture of my ugly mug on the website citytalk.fm or ever met me in person, you will know I'm built for comfort, not for speed. I have spent many years investing in my girth. Listen to that, all bought and paid for, all man. However, I have enough intelligence to know that if I wanted to get fitter, I need to be going out and doing something in the open air, maybe running around the park, having a game of footy, maybe even going to the gym or having a swim, not playing on a computer game. Exercise programs and sports activities on the Wii Games console can be as good as taking exercise the old-fashioned way. According to a study, a third of the activities that can be undertaken on the console was said to require energy expenditure equivalent to moderate intensity exercise, of the kind that government recommends to keep fit and healthy. The researchers found that people could even expend more energy playing some Wii sports games or working out with the Wii Fit than during a brisk walk. Think about this for a second. Someone has sat down, oh, well, do you know what? Forget about running around the park. Just stand up in your living room. pretending to do some exercise on a computer console. Now, I used to be totally against the Wii until I discovered Tiger Woods Golf. Tiger Woods Golf, it's great. You can go on there, and if you're hooked up to the internet, you can play a round of golf up against someone else in the world. It's amazing what technology does. I like that. It builds bridges. But I don't pretend for one moment playing Tiger Woods Golf is going to help me shed a stone. Because I know if I really needed to actually get rid of some of my weight, I should be out doing some proper exercise. Dr. Motohiko Miyake, the lead author of the study, said the range of energy expenditure in these active games is sufficient to prevent or to improve obesity and lifestyle-related disease from heart disease to diabetes. Now, here's your starter for 10. Guess who funded this research? Any idea who funded this research, of which the top line result is spending some time in your front room on the Wii Fit is as good as running around the block. Any idea who stumped up the cash for this research to be undertaken? Go on, you're getting warm, you're getting close. Nintendo. Oh, who would have thought it? The people who make consoles funded a research, and lo and behold, the results dictate that you can get fit using a Wii Fit. Well, I only have one thing to say to you lot who've come up with this conclusion. Donuts.
Dunkin's Donuts.
The best of breakfast. City Talk 105.9.